Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games, Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games, Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Recalibration Matrix. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me, as always, is your friendly neighborhood,
Greg Webster.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, Jay.
So, I'm excited because we have a very special guest with us this week, one Omnis from Omnis Protocol. Hello, Omnis.
Hey, what's up, nerds?
Living the dream.
Absolutely. That's the plan, right?
So, you'll...
I'm living.
Yeah. You'll appreciate this, Greg. So, you will as well, actually, Omnis. So, we have a friend, Mr. Michael Tilly Winters.
Love that dude. So much.
He's a great guy, right? And he sent me a meme one time that was basically like, anytime a white person tells you that they're living the dream, it's code for they secretly wish they would die. This is just such a chilly meme to send.
You know, it's kind of funny because when we get to the comic book portion, I feel like that's kind of Star-Lord's attitude through the entire comic.
Yeah, that's kind of true. It's going to be an interesting comic book arc to discuss.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited to get to it.
Yeah, yeah. Do you guys have any interesting things to talk about before we dive in?
I feel like I should give a personal update after your last episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, on the last episode of Greg's life, my wife was quarantining because she got tested positive for COVID, and I believe I was still waiting on my own test results.
Yeah.
At the time, the best case scenario was I test negative, or I test positive, so there's no reason for her to stay home. So I ended up testing negative, and so my wife had to wait until she got a negative test, but she did get a negative test result, so she's been back home for a couple days, so that's really great. And I've been able to have like a couple moments of breathing time to myself, but I still haven't been able to get any games in. I'm maybe next week or the week after I'm going to be able to go out to get some actual games in. So hopefully you guys have gotten in more games.
We actually pushed back this record one day because I was going to get in a game earlier and ended up playing it today, this morning, and so that I would actually have some experience with these characters, and so that was great. It's nice to actually get to game again.
Omnis, how about you?
Well, I luckily got quite a few games in with Star-Lord before the quarantine really started, because he was in my primary roster at that time, and I'm still carrying on and getting as much practice as I can, sometimes against myself, but been recording the new videos and stuff for the YouTube channel, so I've been keeping myself motivated.
Awesome. Well, before
I did watch
we...
your videos, Omnis.
Yeah. Go.
And, like, they're really... If you haven't seen the Omnis Protocol YouTube videos, they're really cool. So far you have two, and you just did a Hulk one today, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. I really like just the chance to, like, show people the visual of that, and really fun. Thanks for doing them.
It's been fun to do so far. The only problem is every time I do one, I have a totally new idea for how I'm going to do it. And so I end up wanting to redo the other three. I'm like, nope, just move forward. Like, even right before this show, I have a new grid layout for it that's going to be better than what the first three shows were. But I'm like, as much as I want to just change the originals, just got to keep moving forward, keep making new content.
Yeah,
totally.
That is a good plan. So, real quick, I wanted to give a little bit of info on release dates for people in the United States. So here's a few release dates for Asmodee and a few different games. On the 5th of June, we're going to have some Star Wars Legion releases, Cassian Andor, Iden Verzio, AAT Trade Federation Battle Tank, and Vital Assets Battle Expansion. But Then the exciting part is on the 12th, we have free releases for Crisis Protocol, Gamora and Nebula, Corvus Glaive and Proxima Midnight, Black Dwarf and Ebony Maw. And then on the 26th, there are X-Wing damage decks, but then on top of that, we have Drax and Ronan the Accuser and Hawkeye and Black Widow character pack. So,
nice.
Excited to have five box sets releasing in June, and excited for, I'm ready for Thanos to drop too.
Give me Thanos.
Jay, I feel like you should read off those dates like you're a pastor in front of your congregation. And on June 12th, we shall have it, the Black Dwarf, and we shall have it, the Ebony Maw. And all of us nerds are like, hallelujah, praise you, Jay, give us the models.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a drought, but I'm excited to get stuff to my painter, so that'll be fun. So, we are going to... go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, it's going to be exciting to finally have all the Guardians.
Yeah, it's been kind of weird to be in the position that, frankly, usually the other international players are at, where we know that they've already received some models and had earlier release dates, and we're eagerly waiting to catch up. And so that feels a little bit weird. I guess it would be a bad form for us to complain too much with the role finally being reversed. But it's still exciting to get a chance to get those.
Do you remember when they first teased Thanos? One of the employees said, oh yeah, probably around March.
I remember when he's
dropping. Like, that was their original timeline.
Yeah.
I just want to know what the leadership does. I need to know what the Black Guard leadership does. I can wait on Thanos a little bit, but give me that.
I am excited to see where that comes in. All right, well, Greg, do you want to read us the stats for Star-Lord?
Yeah, sure. So Star-Lord is a three-threat character. He's got 6 stamina on his healthy side and then 5 on his bat. He's a medium mover. He's size 2. So right off the bat, he's got pretty average size and move and health. His defense is 3-3-3. So again, he's average, I'd say. He's got 2 attacks. Both of them have a lot of similarities. They're both energy. They're both range 4. His first attack is Element Gun, which is 5 dice, and then he gains power equal to the damage dealt, and it costs 0. So it's your strike, but he does it at range 4. It's energy. So pretty good. His second attack is obviously the more powerful one. It costs 3. It's range 4, like I said. It's 7 strength. It's called Full Auto. And this one has a really cool wild ability. The wild ability is Elemental Blast. For each wild resolved, you can give the target bleed, shock, slow, or stun. So very impressive attack there. The ability to give out multiple status effects at the same time is really juicy. He has flight innately. He has a superpower called Plucky Attitude. When attacking, if he rolled no hits, he can re-roll all of his current attack dice. When defending, if he rolls no blocks, he may re-roll all of his current defense dice. This is a really interesting one that I think comes up, it makes other re-roll abilities really odd, because you might want to re-roll a hit to something else, if you can, to try to re-roll all of the attack dice. So it's a neat ability.
Just to interject a question on this, if when you read this, it says you may re-roll all the dice, all of its current attack dice, etc. That's still not going to overrule the critical failure rule, correct? You can't roll.
Yeah, you can't re-roll critical failures.
Yeah.
It still stops those.
Yeah.
And it is important to remember on these, like, wilds and crits can still be re-rolled in this. It's something where, as long as you didn't get hits or you didn't get blocks, you could still choose to re-roll if you got, like, one wild and you're like, I think I can do better.
Yeah.
Yes, it has to be the hit symbol. That's specified in there, but I don't know how to say hit symbol. I don't know how to pronounce that.
The little pow punchy symbol.
Pow explosion. So he is the leader of the Guardians of the Galaxy, so his affiliation ability is called Winging It. Once per round, at the start of your turn, you may choose an allied character and discard a team tactic card to use this leadership ability. So right off the bat, that's weird, very different from everyone else. The chosen character gains 3 winging it tokens. After rolling attack dice, defense dice, or dodge dice, it can discard 1 winging it token to re-roll up to 2 of its dice. Only 1 winging it token may be discarded per roll, and you remove all the winging tokens during cleanup phase. So a really, really weird leadership ability that basically gives you 3 chances to reroll 2 dice for anything, almost anything, but you have to discard a team tactic card. And the final thing that I skipped over earlier is that he is a gem bearer, so he can take the Power Infinity Gem. So I'm going to read the Power Infinity Gem as well, but it increases his threat by 1 and gives him 2 additional power instead of 1 additional power during the power phase. So I'm going to ask you guys, what are your thoughts when you hear him?
Okay, so I have lots of stuff I want for us to go over. So my first question is, what do you guys think of him with versus without the Power Gem?
So my thoughts about the Power Gem are that in most cases, I'm not going to want to bring it, just because I really love him at 3 points, and I think he's fantastic, and I don't think he's going to need the power as much, because he's going to be element gunning a lot, and then sitting on excess power. I don't see him needing those extra power every turn, unless you're trying to use other things with him. I do think the tempting part is being able to guarantee maybe a full auto every single turn, no matter what else happens. But for me, I see him using it, but also not using it. So it might for me just be like a point filler.
Mm. So Omnis, you said that you got a fair bit of chance to play around with Star-Lord before we went into lockdown. What were your thoughts on Power Gem versus no Power Gem?
So in this case, I'm going to actually give it like a straight 50-50. It really just depends on what role he's filling on your team. Sometimes you just want the budget, like as a 3-cost shooty character, he's just really solid. He, you know, with the plucky attitude, you know, you're generally going to get like reasonable success out of it. He's usually not going to totally flub. And then you've got, you know, he's really cost effective, especially with 6 stamina, right? But there are certain times that the gem really pushes him up. If you want him to be an elite attacker in your team, he can do that. If you want someone who can drop off and then still have energy to spare, if you want someone who can, like, use Inspiring Monologue on a first turn play to, like, help you do something really aggressive and put someone in a dangerous position, like, Star-Lord can facilitate those sort of things. And so, again, it just kind of depends on where you want him to fit in your team, but I've played him both ways, and it's just choosing the right with or without the gem for your situation.
So I played the matchup I played today. It actually ended up being kind of a Guardians of the Galaxy versus Guardians of the Galaxy matchup, and okay. I ended up playing with the Power Gem. My opponent played without it, and partially because he had misread the card and thought that basically you're only going to be getting 2 power instead of 3, and he's like, well, that's not worth a threat level. But afterwards, he, I think, was kind of jealous of me having the Power Gem, and said that he kind of wished that he had done it. But, you know, I'm not sure I know what to say about it. I'm like you guys, it's a little bit difficult to have a hard or fast one way or the other as to what you're going to be doing with it.
I will say that I really like if I'm just building a Guardians roster where he's going to be in most of my lists, I'm going to take the Power Gem in my 10 just to make sure I can fill points with him if I'm like, so that I can feel more flexible. I don't have like a specific, like what Omnis was saying about it helps what role he's going to be in. I haven't gotten there with planning it yet, but I just like the flexibility. It's really cool that he can be 3 or 4 points.
So I think this is a slight spoiler to a future episode, but obviously we know that Ronan can also use the gem, and I think it's probably more likely to be on Ronin, but I do think you're going to probably see a lot of Star-Lord plus Ronin as almost like the beginning of a lot of Guardians lists, and so I think having the gem as an option to push either of them up one point for your math is solid too.
So here's my next question with Star-Lord. He's obviously the leader of the Guardians of the Galaxy, but I'm a little curious how often do you think you guys are going to be playing him outside of him leading that affiliation? And that kind of had me wondering a little bit in relation to the, you know, the power gem, the point cost, etc. Because you're kind of looking at opportunity costs. And so if he's not leading the affiliation, do you see yourself playing him if you're doing 3 points as opposed to, compared to like Shuri or compared to Iron Man, or at 4 points? There's obviously just like so many good 4 point options. I'm kind of curious what were your guys' thoughts on that?
Greg, do you want to go first?
I love him in Cabal and I love him in Wakanda. So in Cabal, he's just, I don't think he needs the power gem in Cabal, because he's just going to be sitting on power eventually for his full autos. I previously was using Iron Man in Cabal, and I think Star-Lord is just a way better choice, because he can hand out status effects that much easier, and that's something that Cabal wants more. He's just such a nice ranged energy attacker versus anything else they have. I really like him in Wakanda because I think he's really fun with Plucky Attitude, and it helps because, like I said, with Wakanda you can re-roll that one die, like, oh, I got one hit, well, I'm going to re-roll it to try to make it a not hit so I can re-roll everything, or with the defense. So I think he's an amazing attacker. I just think full auto is such a great, like, range 4, power 7, and then the high chance of choosing what status effect to put on someone is really cool. And I've been using drop off more and more, and so just having another, like, character with flight to choose from, I think he's a really strong just ranged attacker outside of Guardians.
I definitely agree with that assessment. I mean, any drop off is a huge part of the metagame for Marvel Crisis Protocol. I think everyone can probably admit that at this point. Utilizing drop off is just huge. And so especially for something like Wakanda, who doesn't have any innate flyers, he does fit in really well, where he can often have power for rerolls. Giving them a drop-off option at minimal cost is great, but I think he can fit in a lot of places. I may not play him in Cabal. I get why you would, but I think the Cabal core is so strong that it's hard to break that up and, like, fit in Star-Lord. But in a lot of other affiliations, he can also just be a patch-up battery where he's just going to be able to blast people. And if you just want to be able to casually patch up MODOK for 5, you know, he can absolutely do that with the gem, like, with ease. And so some of those spendier cards, he just makes it so casually easy for you to use them when you want to.
Yeah, I guess some of my thoughts with it were another affiliation that I've heard some people talk about that they are kind of interested with him in is either as Guardians or more specifically, I guess I should say, with lists where you're playing Hela. Being able to get out, potentially bleed at a range attack is kind of interesting, although that will likely get eclipsed with Hawkeye in the future, I'm guessing. Another thing that I thought about this was that I think I'm going to have a lot harder time when he's playing non-affiliated to justify the 4-point cost versus the 3-point. And maybe this is some pulpy thinking on my own, but I think that I could, maybe I'm putting too much emphasis on him being a leader or his value as a leader or whatever, but I mentally kind of justify him being at 4 points as the leader of the faction a little bit more easily than when he's filling out a different affiliation. Partially because, as I said before, just the 4 points slot is such a really competitive, lots of good characters to go in there, and even with the gem, I'm not I don't know. I don't think that he's gonna make too many of my non-affiliation lists, but you know, maybe I need to. It feels like there's so many options that I need to test out, but maybe I just need to test a little bit more before I doubt him this way, I guess.
I can just start dumping ideas on you, Jay, and you'll just have loads of lists to test.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of stuff that I need to play. That is correct.
I think with Star-Lord and like talking about going out of affiliation, a lot of times I think it might be better to reverse that thought and think of like what's the best non-affiliated models to go with Wingnut, because I really do have the feeling that it's really fun to have like three Guardians and then two non-Guardians might be the better choice.
Mm-hmm.
I think that'll be pretty common.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think it's...
Go ahead.
No, you go.
I was going to say, we'll probably end up getting to this in the bonus episode, but it is kind of interesting that I think that Thor ends up being a great Asgardian of the galaxy. And a good example of... It's like they're... Just the way that their points work, etc., it's kind of interesting that, you know, that you can have a bunch of lower cost potentially models and then some out of faction heavy hitters, or you can have some more expensive ones. One, like I said, like Amos had said, with going with Ronan. So I do think it's interesting.
Thor is absolutely a ton of play in Guardians.
Yeah,
agreed. You can get a Guardians affiliation by only spending 7 points to get Rocket Nebula Star-Lord, and I think that's going to be really common. So you're like, well, I got 7 points, and then I got Thor and MODOK.
Thor and Valkyrie gets you to 15.
Yeah.
Like, right there, you're like, oh, that's kind of scary.
It's real good. I like it. Makes me curious about Angela, since she's going to be Asgardian and Guardian.
Yeah.
Funny.
I guess one of my... How big of an issue... I guess another reason why I have a little bit of a hard time spending if with the gem outside of affiliation, he does have plucky attitude to help on defense sometimes, but in general the survivability at 4 points doesn't excite me a ton. And I understand that in general you're gonna need to be trying to using distance and stuff like that with his guns to be one of the bigger defenses, but how has, I guess, Star-Lord performed for you guys survivability-wise?
He ends up being about what you would expect. He's middle of the road. His plucky attitude is actually more of a defensive ability than it is an offensive ability. So a lot of cases where we've all flubbed a defensive roll, right? You're only rolling 3 to 4 dice usually. And so it's really easy for him to flub and then reroll and get 1 or 2 successes. And so it's very rare that he ever takes full damage. So he's slightly better than what he seems, because he feels better than Hela defensively, right? 4 dice versus 3 with plucky attitude. He ends up feeling slightly better than Hela in a lot of situations. But, I mean, it's middle of the road. It's not a Captain of America. It's not a MODOK. But he's not as squishy as Shuri or, you know, Rocket by any means.
Yeah, I'm with you on it. It's a really useful defensive ability, and I was thinking it almost feels like it's invulnerability at low defense, because he's getting like one hit on average most of it, or one block on average a lot of times. So
the chance of him getting 0 is extremely low with both rolls. You know, it's a little better than it seems on defense. It's a little worse than it seems on offense. But I'll save some. I'll have a specific roster that I was testing for very competitive play that includes Star-Lord in 2 different versions. But we'll go over that in your bonus episode.
Awesome. Okay. Well, so I want to, for the last topic, I guess, on the main episode before we go into the comic book club, let's talk a little bit about his leadership ability. So I'm curious what you guys think of this one.
Well, so when I first read it, and I saw a lot of people giving it a very hard time, I stepped back and was like, you know what, if I could take a tactics card that said 0 cost, give a character 3 winging it tokens, I would be like, this is the best tactics card. I would take it in every roster. Like, a 0 cost, potentially up to 6 rerolls for a character. That's so good. Now, obviously, you're trading that for not having a benefit the rest of the time, and so I mean, it's kind of the trade-off.
It's obviously a really big trade-off that you're not doing Dark Reign or Cosmic Invigoration or Wakanda Forever, you know, etc.
You also get the ability to take some of the weirder tactics cards, right, like Trip Up, Follow Me, like stuff that you're like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to use it, but you're like, well, I'm playing Star-Lord with the gem, so him using Follow Up isn't really that crazy, but if I don't want to use it that way, I can just get a bunch of rerolls, and so that's super. So I like it. I think it's stronger than a lot of people think that it is, and I think when you start seeing Drax and Ronan and these Star-Lord, you know, and being able to just hand that out to Thor and that sort of stuff, and the fact it costs nothing. I mean, costs no power. Obviously, it costs your tactics card. But in general, I like it, and I think it's better than what people think.
Yeah, I think it allows you to have these real big swingy activations, and it incentivizes characters with more than one attack, with more that are able to make more than two attacks. So, like, talking about Valkyrie with it, I really like the idea of being able to use winging it for 3 attacks and just really focus in on killing someone with an offensive character.
So go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, like, it makes me really like to consider Ultron with him and just be like, oh, if I'm not gonna get Age of Ultron, I can always ditch that card and not feel like taking a tactic card for a specific character, you know, or I can take Venom, and if I lose Venom early from misplay, I'm not totally worried about having Lethal Protector in my hand that I can't use.
Or both, because both Venom and Ultron synergize with each other and love access to rerolls.
Yeah.
And are really easy to fit in, even at, as we said, even at 15 points.
I'm still a little bit on the fence with this leadership ability. So, admittedly, when I played today, so the list I was playing, we were playing a 15-point scenario. I had Star-Lord with the gem. I had Rocket, Groot, Gamora, and Nebula. And there was a lot of times, so all my tactics cards, I ended up using for wing unit tokens. And there was a fair number of times where basically the character only ended up using one of the 3 tokens before they ended up getting cleared away. And granted, some of that was just me excessively using this ability almost a little bit because I wanted to see what I thought about it, etc. But also, I think another, you mentioned, characters that can get 3 attacks, that's obviously good. But also, I think Thor is another good example where he can go up, maybe use a couple tokens, and then have one to be able to use
on defense. And that's,
defense?
That's,
yeah.
I think that's kind of perfect for Thor. He likes that just little bit extra guarantee, like get that 4 Asgard stagger in there, and then have just a little bit, you know, one reroll save, and like, you're gonna attack me, I'm gonna make you regret it next turn.
Right, right.
It's also cool with drop off, because you can like, you can give someone the winging it tokens, drop them off, and use the winging it tokens on that free attack. And then they're sitting there with defensive tokens until their activation. I think that's another, like, really fun way to use it.
I love it, Greg.
One thing I will say, so I've maybe sounded a little bit negative about it, one thing I do think that is quite positive about it is that if you are, let's say it's early game, and you are going for, you're trying to do kind of a hard alpha strike or try to do some impact on your opponent, a lot of times with the team tactics cards or the superpowers or whatever, at the start of the game, the limiting factor is going to be, you know, how much power you have available to do stuff. And being able to potentially give a character 6 rerolls at the start of the game so that if they're able to get a strong alpha strike and then get in there, have all those rerolls, that can end up having a pretty big impact at the start of the game. All right, well, we're going to pause the discussion of tactics with Star-Lord there and start talking about our comic book club.
Oh, yeah.
So, Greg, can you introduce the arc that we're talking about?
Yeah, so we're talking about the core arc for Annihilation from 2006.
All right.
I'm gonna jump the gun on your question about why did we choose this one.
Okay.
So I want a little bit of history. Marvel has had like a ton of cosmic heroes for a long time. And most of them have been introduced to Marvel Comics through the Fantastic Four. And then later the X-Men became like really cosmic focused. But they've always been around. Marvel didn't really use most of the cosmic heroes for almost 20 years from like the 80s to the 2000s. And they kind of were, Annihilation was the Marvel Comics series that brought a ton of cosmic heroes together and used them again. And then from this storyline is the reason we get the Guardians of the Galaxy that we know from the, like, the MCU. Because really, that's the team I think we think of when we think of, like, the Marvel cosmic heroes. But that's a new team. That's a new, like, group of older Marvel heroes. This storyline was coming out at the exact same time as Civil War. And it was kind of, it was really popular with a lot of people who didn't really enjoy Civil War or the idea of like the big crossover. And it was a lot easier to follow because there were like less issues and less tie-ins and stuff like that. But this is basically a story where we see Star-Lord coming back into the Marvel, universe and becoming, you know, a central character again, and he goes on later to become the leader of the Guardians. We see Drax get reinvented into how he looks in the movies. We just see all sorts of, like, big cosmic heroes coming in and dying. If you're, like, an old-school Marvel fan, you'll notice, like, all sorts of other, like, really weird characters from, like, the 70s and 80s, like Rom Space Knight and all the other Space Knights are in, like, one page. And that's weird. Like, those are weird characters. So it's just this big, like, goofy military crossover.
So do you want to go ahead and give us an overview of what happened in this arc?
Yeah. Okay. So Annihilus is a classic Fantastic Four villain from the Negative Zone. And the Negative Zone has been shrinking because as our universe, like, as the main universe expands, the Negative Zone is contracting. And so Annihilus has basically noticed this and decided that it's like an attack on the planet. And so Annihilus is basically a god bug who has bug armies. And like the Fantastic Four have constantly just been fighting him and just containing him in the Negative Zone. So he's broken out and he is destroying the cosmic world. Like, he destroyed the Skrull homeworld, he destroyed the Kree, not their homeworld, but their throne world, where, like, their government was, and so the Kree had to, like, fall back. His armies are so massive that nothing is able to stop them, and before this comic starts, he has, you know, obviously he has gotten Thanos to work for him. He's recruited all these other cosmic villains to basically be his generals. And so what we see is a desperate defensive military led by Nova and Star-Lord and Ronan the Accuser. And they're defending and losing the battle. And so they're basically falling back and nothing is holding the Annihilation Wave back. And it's called the Annihilation Wave. And so, as the story goes on, the United Front dissolves after a big loss, and all the armies are, all the planet's armies are fracturing. And we find out that the biggest force, the Kree, so because the Kree lost all their command, there's a new house in command, and they're basically selling the Kree out to Annihilus and his army, so that they can profit off of it. So we have a lot of different things coming in together, but basically, Drax goes out on his own to kill Thanos. Moondragon finds Thanos after being captured, and she's basically confronting him about how he's a pawn in Annihilus's plan. Thanos has basically, he's asking Moondragon, what is Annihilus planning, because she's a psychic. And they find out that Annihilus, oh, I need to take two steps back, I'm sorry. Annihilus's greatest weapon is a machine built by Thanos that uses Galactus as a weapon to destroy planets and absorb their cosmic energy. So Galactus normally will destroy a planet and feed on that cosmic energy. So they've built a machine that shunts all the cosmic energy into battery and feeds Galactus just enough to keep him from dying. Thanos has turned Galactus and, like, the Silver Surfer into part of this big machine. Well, it turns out that Annihilus is actually turning the machine into a bomb that will destroy all life in the Negative Zone and in our reality. So Thanos is like, well, I'm just gonna stop it. I'm gonna release Galactus, and then we're gonna run away. At that same time, Drax arrives, murders his way to Thanos. Moondragon tries to stop him, but Drax is a murder machine who has been programmed to kill Thanos. So Drax just mindlessly punches through Thanos' chest and kills him. By the way, the moment where, like, Thanos is dying and he sees death, I love that. I thought that was really cool, where he, like, turns and sees death waiting for him. Drax uses Silver Surfer to free Galactus, and then Galactus and Silver Surfer end up destroying the Annihilation Wave, and then it turns into a big brawl between Annihilus and Nova. Nova, at this point, has taken in the power of every single Nova Corps member because they're all dead. So basically, every Nova Corps member was massacred by the Annihilation Wave in defense of their home planet. It didn't work, and then the like artificial intelligence of the Nova Corps just shunted all the power into Richard Rider. So he has the power of every single Nova member. So he's super powered right now. The only reason Annihilus is able to fight back and really hold him off is because he has the Omnibands, which are a very old cosmic artifact that, oh dear, who is it that gets the Omnibands off of him?
Captain Marvel's daughter?
Yes, Phylavel, who is Captain Marvel's daughter. The original Captain Marvel's. So Phylavel gets the Omnibands back. They're Quasar's quantum band. Ugh.
Man.
So Nova
I was
gonna
say, I know they're the quantum bands, but I didn't know that was something different. God.
Yeah,
I would never have corrected you, Greg.
I'm sure a lot of people wouldn't have realized. No, they're different, I think. They might be a different name for
it. Infinity Stones, Infinity Gems, cool
okay,
stuff.
Omniband is not a thing. So the quantum band, yes.
Okay.
So this is like the defining, just like the Civil War was like this huge defining moment for Marvel. The Annihilation War was basically like, it left the cosmic universe in chaos. It had like treaties between all sorts of things. I really like that they can't kill the Annihilation Army, the Annihilation Wave, and they basically just like sign a treaty with it and it just sits on one planet. but it leads to this like huge change in the cosmic universe. One of the more interesting things that I liked a lot about it was Galactus was kind of this like, he was this like nice guy who went around looking for uninhabited planets. And this kind of reset Galactus where he needed to eat more. And so Galactus was now more of a cosmic threat that was moving around. I just love it. And, you know, if it wasn't for Annihilation and what came later, we wouldn't have Guardians of the Galaxy.
So a couple of quick questions for you, Greg. Both mm-hmm. towards the end of this arc. So Nova has fought versus Annihilus, and he's kind of dying, but he gets saved by Star-Lord and you know what her name was?
Phylavel.
Sure.
Cammy
yeah.
was there too, right?
Who?
Yeah, Cammy. I forgot all about Cammy because Cammy doesn't matter. But Cammy was
so
Cammy and Sex Fairy, right?
Yeah,
so,
Screet, yeah, she's weird.
So he's Nova's dying, his head's tilted back, and he sees Thanos and a woman in black robes.
Death. That's death. He sees death and he sees Thanos.
Okay. Okay. Well, I mean, I guess the death part then makes that a little bit more logical. But were they trying to say something at that point, I assume?
So, okay. So the original, in the comics, the reason that Thanos collected the Infinity Gems and destroyed half the universe was because he was trying to gain the favor of death.
Right.
The death is a physical woman that Thanos wanted to be the consort of. He was in love with her. He was constantly trying to, like, convince her that he was worthy and, like, worthy of her love and affection. And basically all of, like, for everything he did, it just made death, like, less interested in him because he acted like he was a god and above his station. And he did things that were not attractive to death. The implication here is that Thanos trying to, like, right his wrongs, and Thanos' journey up to here has made him favorable to death, and that he is now death's consort, like, in his death.
Okay.
And Nova is so close to death that he's...
Okay. Then the other thing, other note of a few things that were interesting. So... Basically, my only exposure to Ronan was in the MCU. And in this arc, he's basically good guy Ronan, it seems like. And then at the very end, as near as I could tell, he basically becomes the ruler of the Kree. Is this all correct?
Yes. So all of the Kree, like, ruling houses are gone. And so basically the Kree decided he would become the new emperor, and yes, from this point on until he was the emperor of the Kree for about 15 years in the comics.
Okay, who knew? Besides, I guess, thousands of Marvel fans.
Greg, I was gonna ask you, because the interesting thing about this arc to me was it wasn't really that much about Star-Lord. Yeah, he was there and he had some quippy lines. But this would have been a great arc for the Ronin episode, because this has me so excited to play the Ronin model. I'm like, this is what he was built after.
So one of my considerations for all of our Guardians episodes is that I want people who follow along to actually, like, read these in roughly chronological order. And there are better Ronin stories that I want us to read for. I have something in mind for the Ronin episode. And I wanted to read this one first because it sets the stage for everything else. Like,
I knew there had to be a reason, so I'm glad I asked.
So then, the very last thing I guess that we can touch on for this episode, at the very end, Annihilus's right-hand man basically is holding what looks like an egg of Annihilus and says that his lord lives. Is I'm assuming that's correct interpretation?
Yeah, you can't really kill Annihilus. He just keeps coming back.
Oh, that's too bad.
So, like, so it's a baby. It's a baby Annihilus that'll grow up to be big Annihilus.
Okay. Well, we'll have lots of stuff to talk about with this arc, and also about Star-Lord in our bonus episode. But before we do, Greg, why don't you go ahead and thank our people who support us on Patreon?
Yeah. So, something interesting I did want to say is that in these uncertain times, as all my emails began with, like, listenership has dropped. We really appreciate everybody listening and engaging with us. But our Patreon listeners are the crew that, like, our podcast flies with. And we really appreciate y'all's plucky attitude, even when we're winging it. So thank you.
Even cooler than the crew of Milano, so there you go. Omnis, thank you very much for joining us on this episode.
No problem, I'm happy to be here with you guys.
Yeah, and as always, check out Discount Games Inc. and Musot and Minis. One cool thing, if you haven't had a chance to check out the second token set that Muse put out for Marvel Crisis Protocol, one of the things that I like a lot with that set is that it has generic secure and generic extract tokens. And so, if you want to start a game and don't want to, search through a gazillion different tokens, you can just have those real easy to start with. And so, check them out with that.
You know why I like them, Jay?
Why is that?
Because I left three of my hammers in my pants when I put them in the washing machine. And I needed to get those. I needed to get replacement tokens for that.
It's a good reason. You can also wash your secure and extract tokens that are made of acrylic, and
it's amazing.
They'll probably be okay. Hopefully. Don't try
no,
this.
No, I've washed a couple of them. They're fine.
Okay. Good. All right. Well, stay tuned to the bonus episode, and thank you everyone for listening.